Can all hear me okay?
Yep. Okay. I'm just going to go across the area of quality of service in routers and switches, talk about some of the different queuing techniques, things like that. Or what to do when your tubes start looking like this river. Kind of pull. So back in the old days, it was quite simple. Picked up a phone, went through a piece of dedicated copper, and you got to talk to the person at the other end. It was very easy. These days, it's not quite so simple. We have a lot of different applications running across our networks now, and there seems to be more and more coming on board, and some require different types of service, like VoIP needs very low jitter. So in the QoS world, we've got basically three types of service. We have the reservation model, which is a hard guaranteed service delivery. Means you have to signal end-to-end that you want that particular amount of bandwidth and that service. You have to... For services like VoIP or delivering video across the IP network, a hard service is really required to make sure they work properly. Then you have a differentiating model, which is called a soft service. It doesn't guarantee any kind of latency or jitter across the network, but it does. It will get you there eventually. And then, of course, you've got your just best efforts standard service, which is what most of the internet is at the moment. You can mix all the models together quite easily. I know quite a few networks that do mix those models quite successfully. So in the reservation model, you have a request that comes from one endpoint and it signals all the way through, and ideally through your network. Every device along the way will support this reservation system so that you can make sure that your reservation is there and all the way back. You can signal like to have a hard or soft session, so there may be more stringent or less stringent requirements upon the connection. InServe is a good model of the reservation model. It uses RSVP, which signals end-to-end. You got guaranteed service, which provides a mathematical upper bound on packet delays. So if you have SLAs that you have to keep to make sure that packets are getting end-to-end in a certain amount of time, then that's very useful. And you have the old controlled load service, which is best effort but guaranteed amount of bandwidth across the network. Also another reservation model is the ATM, Forum Traffic Management. It's a hard state signaling, and it's got these, anybody who's dealt with ATM will recognize the old constant bit rate, variable bit rate, and unspecified bit rate types of service. In the differentiating model, you have no end-to-end signaling, and the advantage is none of your core switches need to understand the how to classify the traffic. They just have to understand the bits in the packets that signal what type of service it is, and then forward it on the per hop behavior that you've set up. So in the core of your network, it's very simple to keep going, and you only have to configure it on your edges. So using DiffServe, which is signaled, uses the type of service bits in the IPv4 header or the class field in IPv6, you can say set up expedited forwarding packets, which will in theory, at least get through your network quicker than other packets, as long as everything's set up to use those packets. And yeah, so they predefined a bunch of different types of service. You got expedited forwarding, which is just the expedited forwarding. You got several classes of assured forwarding, and then you can use class selector, which is effectively like using the old TOS bits. And another model is the 802.1 priority bits. Recently they added a 802.1 AD to support drop precedence, which allows quite a nice way to be able to map DSCP directly onto the 802.1 priority bits. So you get a very nice mapping. You don't need a layer 3 device necessarily anymore, which could be quite handy. So the in the 802.1p, you have they're actually in the tag control information, and you've got the three bits up the top there, that's the user priority, and that, you know, the combination of those three bits is what the priority is. And on your IPv4 packet, you've got the type of service field, which has been repurposed several times over the years. So you can, it can be either type of service or IP precedent or DSCP, depending on which version of things you're running. So I suspect most people would be using DSCP nowadays, but there may be stuff out there that still uses IP precedents or type of service. Makes for a bit of fun, but... So when your actual packets hit the router or the switch, this is the general flow. I stole this diagram from someone else, the other diagrams I drew. So you go through these steps, through admission control, classification, marking, policing and markdown. So along this way, packets may get dropped out of the router. After the policing and markdown, that's when it gets put through the router fabric or the switch fabric, if it has to traverse across there. So you already know the priority, so priority packets can be forwarded before non-priority packets across the switch fabric. And then on the egress, you've got your scheduling, which is queuing and dropping, and then you're shaping down the traffic to a specific CIR, perhaps, and then some link-specific mechanisms. So when you hit admission control, that's just a classic, you know, access list or filtering in the Juniper routers or Cisco routers, usually done in hardware to make things, and it saves resources, means that traffic doesn't have to traverse the router fabric if it doesn't need to. So you get rid of the packets that you don't want as soon as possible. And then you go on to classification and marking. This is probably one of the most expensive things to do on a router. It takes quite a lot of resource. So you can inspect the packets and class or mark them appropriately. DPI boxes tend to be just very, very fancy classification systems. And you know, they can do deep packet inspection, whereas your classic router will just be able to look at the IP fields or port IP addresses and ports. And then you can mark the traffic, so actually write into these fields type of service, MPLS, EXP bits, whatever you want. And this is where your traffic is also colored, usually, which I'll go into in a wee bit of time. And then, yeah, as I said, it allows your traffic to be classified before it hits the switch fabric, So if you do have expedited forwarding packets, those will always egress across the fabric before anything else. So the single rate three colours thing that came out, I think it was a couple of years ago, maybe, RFC 2697, it's often used on simple edge switches and routers. It only requires one queue per port, which is nice, and basically you colour the traffic into green, yellow and red based on whether or not which traffic profile it falls into. So any traffic that's within the CIR limit gets coloured green, and it should always get accepted in output. Yellow traffic is in the burst size that you've committed to. So often you'll see, you know, traffic is not always level. It bursts up and down, so you can allow a certain amount of bursting as you go through. And red traffic goes into the excess burst size, which is usually allowed as long as there's space within the egress to actually get it out again. So when you colour it, then on egress you can then choose how to deal with it as it leaves the switch or router. So after classification, you police and mark down any traffic. So policing traffic is very similar to shaping, but when you police traffic, instead of putting it, like queuing stuff up, you just drop it. And you can also mark down, so any traffic that is gone over the profile, so maybe it's gone out of the committed rate or out of the burstable rate, will be marked down, so you mark down the priority on those packets. So when they hit the egress again, they won't necessarily get passed out at all. They may just get dropped, depending on what conditions prevail at the time. A combination of the two is usually the best approach, but as always with anything, your mileage will vary on that one. And then it goes through the forwarding process, so the router decides what it actually wants to do with it. Is it going to put it out a different port? So pass across the fabric there and into the egress port, which is where you may end up queuing packets up. So there has been a whole lot of different queuing techniques over the years. These are the generally used ones in IP. So you have strict queuing, which is you've got, you know, priority 1 through 4 or whatever. Priority 1 packets will always get egressed first. So if there's any packets in the priority 1 queue, always get egressed. And then priority 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. You've got a weighted fair queue, where you basically set up for each queue a certain percentage of traffic. So you can try and schedule interactive traffic to have less delay than other traffic. But for things like video or voice, that doesn't work very well if the links are reasonably heavily loaded. It just shoots up the jitter on the packets and everything gets a bit unhappy. And then you have class-based WFQ, which extends the standard WFQ to provide support for user-defined classes, so you don't have to stick with the standard classes. And low latency queue, which is a combination of a single priority queue usually, and the rest is all done through a class-based WFQ. And that's a good combination of queues if you're running high priority traffic through your network. There's a couple of other techniques. Weighted round robin, which is each flow has a separate queue, and it requires knowledge of the average packet size, which is quite problematic on the IP network. Worked really well on fixed packet size things like ATM, not so well on IP. And it serves a number of packets from each non-empty queue, and tries to keep it reasonably fair. someone came up later with this deficit weighted round robin queuing technique, which solves the weighted round robin issues where you have four IP networks, so it uses a reasonably complicated piece of math to try and figure out whether or not it should pass out the packets. And you have to deal with, if you're queuing packets, then you have to deal with congestion handling, because at some point your queue's probably going to fill up and you have to figure out what the best approach to dropping packets is. So you can tail drop your packets, which is like when the queue fills up, just stops putting packets on the queue, just starts throwing them in the bin. And then you have a more active approach to queue management, which helps with there's an issue where you can see what's called TCP global synchronization, which is where all the TCP sessions going across the link kind of start syncing up, and they'll start all ramping up, and then some packets will get dropped and they'll slow down, and you start seeing real big waves on your links where all the TCP sessions are trying to go for it, and then they lose packets, so they back off, and it just everything goes a bit haywire. So you, in theory, your link utilization should improve if you use some kind of active queue management techniques. And by keeping the queue size small, queue management will reduce delays and jitters seen by flows. So it improves things, interactive sessions, things like that. Which is nice for everybody. And then you usually use something like random early detection or weighted random early detection to drop packets if you get to the point where you actually need to start dropping things. So for a random early drop, this is basically the calculation it goes through. So it figures out the average queue length, and then you configure a minimum and maximum threshold, and it goes through every packet that it's going to put on the queue. It goes through this and it looks, is the average less than the minimum, then just enqueue the packet straight away. Is it between the minimum and maximum, then it does a probability calculation on whether or not the packet's going to get dropped. And if it's a high probability, so approaching one, then it will just drop the packet anyway. And that's an error actually. That should be average is above the maximum threshold on the right there. Then obviously it will drop the packet. And that seems to work quite well. There's another variation called weighted random early drop where you can actually, based on the colorings that I mentioned before, change the probabilities, the probability point at which it will start deciding to drop packets, and you'd set your green ones quite high and then yellow lower and then red lower again. And then you get to your shaping, which is shaping down the egress traffic to a set speed. I'm pretty sure everybody understands shaping by now. And any questions? Bit of a whirlwind tour of QoS, but no questions. Excellent.
So we're going to have a morning break, but just before you go, just a reminder that after the next session, so just before lunch, we're going to have the photo. Well, either we might have that around the pool, but if we don't all fit, we might have to sort of spill out into the car park or something. So that's just before lunch. But now it's morning tea.